Hi, everybody. Today is Tuesday, July 8th, 2025, and our friend Professor Morandi is back with us. Welcome back, Professor.
Thank you very much, Nima. Great to be with you.
Let's start with the BRICS summit. And we had the Iranian foreign minister at the BRICS summit talking about the attack on Iran. And what was the main goal of Iran at the BRICS summit? Did the summit, the declaration of summit, provide what Iran asked for?
I think it was enough. The language could have been more assertive, but BRICS has multiple difficulties. And we saw that a number of heads of state, including the Iranian head of state, didn't participate in the summit. There weren't great expectations for the summit in Brazil, although I think it's, from what I've been reading, it's been a useful summit and some progress has been made. Most importantly, I think what BRICS needs to do, and I think what it is facilitating, is finding or encouraging alternatives to the US dollar, Western financial institutions. And I think that is happening. It's a process. I don't think there's going to be one single solution. I think there'll be multiple solutions. But the gathering of these BRICS countries is important. So more important, what's, I think, more important than the declaration itself is the brainstorming and some of the decisions or some of the ideas that are being pushed closer towards final decisions. That's, I think, key.
Do you feel that BRICS is somehow, because at the United Nations, UN, they didn't do anything in terms of the attacks on Iran. And it's, you look at the situation, it's somehow unfortunate to see what's going on with the UN. And do you think that BRICS, as time goes by, should somehow assume the responsibilities of the UN?
Well, it would be a good thing if BRICS did move in that direction, but there are divisions within BRICS itself. And of course, if there are changes in government, things could change even further, or they could be better. For example, right now, what future awaits Brazil itself? What sort of government will be in charge 3 years from now? Or in India, at the moment we have Modi, but how will this last forever? You know, how long will this last? It's difficult to say where BRICS will ultimately go, which direction it will ultimately take, and how far it will go. But I think in the case of Iran, the objective has always been to cultivate friends and allies. But to rely on on internal capabilities. And that's something that Iran has had to experience since the revolution, when Saddam Hussein was encouraged to invade Iran. Both blocs, the Soviet bloc and the US-led bloc, they were supporting him. And of course, the West even gave him chemical weapons to use against his own people and Iranians. So from then, the Iranians, from the very beginning of the revolution, the self-reliance was a key theme. And I think that's the same today. During the war with the Israeli regime, those capabilities that were effective in defeating the regime and forcing it to seek a halt in the hostilities were Iranian-made weapons, Iranian-made missiles, Iranian indigenous capabilities. So I think that is a priority for Iran. Iran won't be counting on BRICS to solve its problems or counting on other countries to solve its issues. It is a fiercely independent country. But also, I think that the reality of the world that we live in basically means that countries have to work towards some sort of independence. We see for example, right now, how the Israelis have been carrying out this Holocaust for 21 months. Yet not a single country in the region has shut down ties with the regime. It's, you know, it's incredible that they're still doing trade. They still have political ties. And so if Turkey and Egypt and Jordan and the Emirates and Morocco, if they're not going to break off ties with the Israeli regime, how can one expect BRICS nations to do anything more? So I think that we have to temper our expectations. And I think that's how it is in Iran. But at the same time, that doesn't mean that Iran is not going to seek political friendships and allies and try to build close ties with countries across the world.
Since you've mentioned the situation in Gaza with Palestine, do you find it that somehow Donald Trump is talking about he wants some sort of ceasefire between Israelis and Hamas? Netanyahu is in the United States talking with Donald Trump. Do you feel that Donald Trump would be in a position to force Netanyahu?
Well, at the moment, it's all praise. If we are to look at the images coming out of Washington, Donald Trump has been proposed to get the Nobel Peace Prize. I have no respect for the Nobel Peace Prize. I never did. It's a worthless prize that belongs to the empire. But in any case, for Netanyahu to call for Trump to become to get the Nobel Peace Prize, and then for Trump to call him a great man or the greatest man of, you know, ever. I think the images don't look very good for the future of Gaza. But I think that if we look on the battlefield, things are not looking well. Things are not looking good for the Israeli regime. During the 12-day war of aggression that the Israeli regime carried out, while Iran was hammering the regime with drones and missiles, the Palestinian resistance had the opportunity to strengthen their defenses and rebuild their capabilities. And now we're seeing that have an effect. Over the last few days, we've seen multiple attacks on the Israeli regime. And remember, Netanyahu on multiple occasions said that this is finished, absolute victory is around the corner. But 21 months, we're approaching 2 years now, and the regime hasn't gotten anywhere. So I think that ultimately there will come a point where Netanyahu falls. Now, whether behind the scenes, what Trump is thinking and what his objectives are, whether he's trying to force Netanyahu to take less aggressive posturing, I don't know. If you recall last time when we spoke, I had the view that perhaps Trump's post on Truth Social posts on Netanyahu and his judicial problems and his problems with the opposition in Israel, where he supported Netanyahu, I thought maybe that has something to do with easing pressure on Netanyahu inside the Israeli regime, so that he would not be fearful of going to jail, so that he would not be fearful of being removed from power. And maybe that would decrease the incentive of Netanyahu to expand war and to create new crises. But again, that's just sheer speculation on my behalf. For me, it is impossible to understand or to be sure of Trump is really up to.
When the conflict,
if anything, who knows, maybe he's not up to anything.
We know that in the mainstream media, the the experts, whoever came to the mainstream media to defend Israel, they were talking about that Hamas is using Palestinians as human shield, and they're, but as time went by, and you see right now Dershowitz, one of the American professor, he comes on the mainstream media saying that killing civilian is part of defeating Hamas. How they can say that on, is that changing? Is something changing in the mainstream media? The culture is changing somehow, legitimizing genocide and what's going on in Gaza? How have we got here?
Well, I think you saw probably the Times and how they tried to once again fabricate evidence about October the 7th. And the likes of Piers Morgan quickly used this nonsense to again try to justify everything that the Israeli regime has done during this period. The myth of the media in the West having anything to do with the open debate and dialogue is dead. And I don't think any sane person believes this anymore. Anyone who thinks that the BBC is out there to provide information for people to better understand their environment or the world that they live in, any such person would be a fool. Whether it's the BBC or Sky News or CBS or ABC or NBC or any other media outlet, they're all controlled by the elites, the powerful, and their interests are virtually identical when it comes to the rest of the world. They may have differences over abortion or over gender or some other issues, but when it comes to the major issues of life and death, genocide, slaughter, invasion, destruction of country after country, forcing tens of millions of people to move, and maiming millions. I mean, in Gaza, we talk about the deaths. You see so many images of so many kids with half their faces blown away, or without any limbs, or badly wounded in a way in which they can never recover. These are the numbers that we don't even think about too much, because we're also hearing numbers where it said that maybe up to 400,000 Gazans have died as a result of this Holocaust, because the people who die of the, who get injured and then later die gradually as a result, or those who die of because of a lack of food or medicine or water. You know, these are not the numbers that the Ministry of Health in Gaza are going to add to their list, or those who are under the rubble and who have been under rubble for almost 2 years now. These are not a part of the number. So this is not something that the Western media cares about. This is not something that interests them. What interests them is empire, is preserving empire, and they will do what it takes to do so. There's no sympathy for the Palestinian people. There's no sympathy for the Lebanese, for Yemen, for Iran. We saw that when they attacked Iran, everyone was siding with the assault. There was the opposition to Trump didn't oppose him when it came to bombing Iran. We heard the nonsense about sleeper cells in the liberal media. The liberal media in the United States was trying to antagonize Iranians in the United States, to create fear against Iranians in the United States, who are for the most part not even a political group. There's a small segment of them which are actually very vocally anti-Iran, because they either belong to the former regime, the Shah's regime, or the MEK terror organization, or they were brought up in the United States and they know that in order to be accepted and to get good jobs, you had to be against Iran. Otherwise, most Iranians in the United States are apolitical for the most part. They're not political, and very few are vocally supportive of Iran. So this Iranian community, which is not it's not at all active in the way in which the Cuban community is, or the in Florida, for example. They're intentionally antagonized, and people and the intention of the liberal media is to create fear among ordinary Americans in order to justify the bombardment of Iran, in order to justify the targeting of Iranian nuclear installations that have been under the IAEA supervision. Their inspectors have been visiting them regularly. So people see that there's no difference between any of these. So he can go on television and say whatever he likes. Piers Morgan, for 21 months, has been talking about October the 7th and rape, and you know the false rape allegations and the lies about beheadings, which were all used to justify this Holocaust and to allow the Holocaust to happen. And now he says, see, I was right. Well, you know, after 21 months, where did this new information come from? Of course it's fabricated. And why would you, if it was, why would you even need new information in the first place? If you were saying that it was happening, it had happened, you already said that it had happened. So obviously you're admitting that you didn't have evidence back then, and that you were making these accusations based upon nothing. And now this new fabricated evidence is put forward, and once again he revives the argument of rape and beheadings and so on. All of these lies, whether back then or now, are the creation of the mainstream media, the Western media, in order to allow the Holocaust to continue. It's clear as day. Where in human history have we seen such a situation where people are being slaughtered every day? Just now, I right before we began talking, I tweeted this child who was, I don't know if he was, I couldn't watch the video. I tweeted it, but I didn't watch the video. And he was in the ground, half of his body was under the ground. I don't know if he was alive or dead. How could this happen anywhere else in the world in front of cameras? It's just impossible. But for the West, everything is possible. Sorry, it's not a good situation. It's a bit, yeah. I'm a bit, I was watching some of these images before we came online, so I'm not very focused right now.
Yeah. We had the interview of the president of Iran, Masoud Pezeshkian, with Tucker Carlson. And one of the questions that Tucker Carlson asked him was the death to America, death to Israel, that Iranian people usually say. And the response of the president of Iran somehow was appropriate, in my opinion, because he said that what does it mean when the people in Iran chanting the death to America? Can you expand on it? What is the main, because people, when they say this, and I remember one of the documentary I saw years before, an American came to Iran and he was in the traffic and with the driver, and the traffic was, it was a traffic jam. He said, death to traffic. Because people want to show their frustration of something. Can you expand on that?
President Pezeshkian's interview, of course, was, as I'm sure you know, a bit controversial in Iran. Many criticize him for being too soft. I think there's some merit in that argument, although I don't think that on the whole the interview was a bad thing. I think it was, since it was directed towards an American audience, I think it wasn't bad. He could have been more firm in some of his responses, but you know, whenever I do interviews, I always regret how I put things, how I said things, what I forgot to say. Maybe I should have said it this way rather than that way. And he is not known to be an excellent speaker, or he's not known to be excellent at interviews. So, but in any case, this part which he spoke about, death to America, death to Israel, It's something that Iranian leaders have been saying since the very beginning of the revolution, that this is directed towards the regime in Washington, and the injustices and the deaths and the slaughter and the coups and the wars and the dirty wars that are brought about by the political regime in Washington. It's just like, you know, the slogan "Yankee go home." Doesn't when they used to say "Yankee go home," they didn't mean that anyone who had a U.S. passport should leave the country. They meant that the regime in Washington, which is a sinister regime, which is out there to manipulate and to control and to impose its hegemony, that regime should leave the country. The imperialists must leave. Death to America has the same meaning in Iran. And Western journalists know this. It's not as if they don't know it. It's sort of like the destruction of Israel, how they speak about it, and they put it alongside the Iranian nuclear program, and they say, well, the Iranians who want to wipe out Israel and the nuclear program is therefore made, is they know they're lying. Iran wants Israel to cease to exist, of course, but as a political entity, that's it. Just like apartheid South Africa, just like Rhodesia, they know this because all of these journalists who come and go to Iran, I can't say all of them, most of them, they've met me, we've had coffee together, they've come to my office, they speak to me online. They know that the people who are influential in these media outlets, whether it's Fox News or whether it's CNN or whether it's the BBC or Sky News, they know that they are being dishonest, intellectually dishonest. They know that this narrative produced by the neocons and the Zionists is a dishonest narrative. But they'll do it anyway. They'll twist the truth. It's just like the 7th of October and the lies about rape and beheadings. Do you think that there's a chance in the world that Piers Morgan doesn't know that there's no evidence? Of course he knows there's no evidence. If there was evidence, he'd be putting it on his TV show every other day. He knows there is no evidence, but he will say it anyway because he wants to help the empire. He wants to help the Israeli regime continue what it's doing in Gaza. So every now and then, when things get really bad, he can see if he could badmouth Netanyahu or something. But at the end of the day, the broader direction of the mainstream media is clear. There's no change. It's clear and will continue to move in the same direction. And so what Pezeshkian said was absolutely correct. It is something that previous presidents have also said, but it's not going to change anything in the United States. Of course, the difference now with the past is that the world has changed and that people no longer trust the United States, and Americans no longer trust the political regime in the United States. And therefore, that mistrust allows information to come in. That information that comes in is believed more easily. And that's why people in the United States today and across Europe are increasingly hostile towards the Israeli regime. So I think maybe since it was Tucker Carlson, maybe since it was a widely watched show, it will have some impact on Americans. And I think Tucker Carlson actually had him on his show and broadcast it immediately while Netanyahu was on the way to Washington, in a way to sort of as a slap in the face of Netanyahu. I have that belief. I think that he did this intentionally to weaken the hand of the neocons and the Zionists, because they want to, of course, continue this war, and the Iranians are preparing themselves for a second round, and I think the Iranians are probably going to hit much harder in the second round. So I think Tucker Carlson and people like him want to block war, and I think that this may be different from the past. I'm not saying there won't be war. I'm saying that having an impact on the general public today in the United States is more possible because of the distrust towards the regime.
Do you think that one of the issues that was discussed during the interview with Masoud Pezeshkian, president of Iran, he was asked if the Iran would attack the United States, if Iran would kill someone in the United States, Donald Trump or anybody else. Why is it so difficult to understand in the West, in the mainstream media, even someone like Tucker Carlson? Maybe he wants to inform the people who are watching the show, and he knows what's going on, but he wants to inform the people. Why is that? Because that could bring some sort of false flag operation on the part of Israelis, because they're desperate, in my opinion, to get something like that, to bring the United States into the conflict even more. Because as time goes, I don't see Donald Trump with the current situation being willing, unless Israel is trying to do a false flag operation to bring the United States in. Your take on that?
Well, if you look at the questions asked by Tucker Carlson, I think they were basically intended to prevent war. So when he spoke about sleeper cells, it was, I think the president said he had never heard of such a thing before, because of course he doesn't follow Western or American media. And it is something outrageous. If you recall, Trump himself was lying about Iran wanting to assassinate him. Or he also, the Western media, they were saying this silly goose Iranian woman with this crazy hair, a mad woman, but I forget her name. But they said that they wanted to kidnap her and then put her in a speedboat in New York and then and go to Venezuela. I mean, if anyone looks at the map and see how far a speedboat would have to travel to get to Venezuela from New York, they would know it's all ridiculous. But these are just manufactured in order to demonize Iran. And ordinary Americans will easily fall for it, because the American people are the most propagandized people on this planet. And as I said, the media, they're all the same. There's no difference. If you recall, even maybe I mentioned this last time, I'm not sure, but when Trump became president first time around, they said he was a Russian stooge, that he was a Putin puppet. And turns out he's a Zionist stooge and a Zionist puppet. But anyway, when he fired missiles at Syria, suddenly everyone supported him. All those who saw him, who said he's a puppet and a stooge, they immediately supported, this violence against Syria. That's how, the political establishment works. There's no difference between the Democrats or the Republicans or Musk's new party. They're all going to be one and the same when it comes to the issues of empire. They may be somewhat different from one another on certain local issues. But and so when the narrative in the United States is so hostile towards Iran, then anything is believable. So tomorrow, I've said this a few times, I do think that the Israelis will carry out some sort of false flag operation, or they will attempt to do so, or they'll at least contemplate it seriously and see if it's possible. And I think Tucker Carlson's objective throughout this interview was simply to prevent war. I think that was his objective. And if you saw, I didn't watch the whole interview. I didn't have time to watch the last 6 or 7 minutes of it. But if you watch his introduction, which he did a couple of days earlier, it just shows how difficult it is to do an interview. He had to sort of defend himself and also, sort of criticize the president, say, well, if I asked this, I wouldn't expect an honest answer or whatever. So he had to protect himself against the attacks that he knew were going to happen. And this just shows how terrible the situation is in the United States for anyone who's anti-war, for anyone who says anything different. And I think Tucker Carlson's strategy was basically to ask questions that would make it more difficult for Trump and Netanyahu to initiate another conflict. The Iranians, by the way, are not fearful of conflict. I think after the 12-day war of aggression on Iran, Iranians today are much more confident about war. They've now that they've experienced it, they murdered 1,000 people. 1,066 people apparently were murdered by the Israelis. But now the armed forces are much better prepared. The people are prepared. People feel that they came out on top. And so hopefully there won't be war. But a lot of people are mentally prepared for an even tougher round. And I think that it's something that we should... I think the chances of it happening are quite high. So Tucker Carlson is trying to stop it, I think. I don't know him, and I've never met him, and I can't comment about his true intentions, but my understanding is that this was a sort of anti-war interview.
When it comes to the negotiations, the talks between Iran and the United States, the president of Iran was mentioned that he was asked about, but you feel that building negotiation, I would say that you have to reconstruct and you have to do everything from scratch, because the United States has destroyed everything. They attacked Iran during the talks. But what comes the main points of Pezeshkian, or your opinion on how Iran can proceed, can find a common ground to talk with the United States? Is that possible, to build in trust again?
I don't think we can do a deal with the United States. I'm not against negotiations in general. We negotiated with Saddam Hussein after 8 years of war. Those were also indirect negotiations initially. I'm not against that in the sense that it gives us, it helps us with the international community and the global South to be seen as the side that wants to find a solution. But I don't think we can do a deal with the United States. I do not think we can trust the United States. I think that if the government wants to do a deal, it would be a mistake unless Trump capitulates and gives some assurances that I just cannot envisage him giving, or compensation. The United States has never been trustworthy. It has always violated agreements, but Trump has gone beyond any other previous president. He's conspired with the Israeli regime, used the negotiations to deceive Iran, and then he carried out an act of, they both carried out acts of war, and he was a part of both sides of this war. He was involved in the Israeli attack, and he himself carried out an attack on Iranians. He threatened the leader with murder. He told Iranians to leave Tehran. He's a monstrous creature. He's pure evil. He's no different than Netanyahu. And therefore, I don't see how we could have a successful agreement with the United States. I am personally opposed to any agreement with the United States under current circumstances. And but if there are negotiations, I don't think that the indirect negotiations, not direct, if there are indirect negotiations, I don't see that as necessarily a bad thing. Because I think it was those very same indirect negotiations that showed the international community that we were the victims. And Trump, I mean, imagine if we were not negotiating, even though he used those negotiations to deceive us, But if we were not negotiating and they attacked us, then they would have said, well, the Iranians were unwilling to talk. That if they had talked, we could have found a solution. And since they were stubborn, and you know, they do have that media that we were discussing earlier on. And a lot of people, I'm sure, would have been deceived. Some Iranians too. So we have to see what lies behind the Iranian intention to negotiate. But I don't think that Ayatollah Khamenei is, I have no doubt that Ayatollah Khamenei knows very exactly what he's doing. He's quite brilliant. He is the chess master, and he has outmaneuvered the United States till now. And I think that therefore, if we do negotiate, that doesn't at all mean that we are being unnecessarily flexible. And I think the problem with President Pezeshkian's interview was that some Iranians were saying that he wasn't assertive enough, he wasn't tough enough with the American government. And I think that is a valid argument. But also I think probably he thought he was speaking to ordinary Americans and Trump supporters who are not happy with war, the sort of people that Tucker Carlson, who liked Tucker Carlson. So I think part of the reason why he was more soft had to do with his audience.
President Pezeshkian said that they wanted to assassinate him when Israelis attacked Iran.
They did assassinate him. Yes, they. Yeah, I knew of this assassination. I don't want to explain. I know a bit about what happened. It was a direct assassination on him and others, which, yeah, this was, this was not the Israelis. The Israelis use intelligence gathered by Western intelligence agencies. This is a collective war. So if anyone thinks that this is Mossad, that's just a joke. This is the Five Eyes. This is Western embassies. These are some Arabic embassies, even other embassies that of countries neighboring us and countries around us that are cooperating with Americans and Israelis. So this attempt to murder the president and other senior officials was something that the Israelis did not carry out on their own. But yes, it was an assassination attack.
If we assume that it could be that they wanted to assassinate the supreme leader of Iran, Ayatollah Khamenei, they wanted to assassinate the president of Iran, all the commanders, it's all about regime change. It's all about what they wanted to do in Iran is about regime change. I don't know if there could be any other possibility for them to do this right now by new attacks, because that opportunity has gone on, that opportunity, by the way, in their eyes has gone, and they have failed to achieve it. Do you think that, how was that changing the perception of the Iranian government officials in Iran and the behavior on the part of the West?
Well, first of all, it's clear as day that this whole house of card myth that the West likes to promote about Iran is nonsense, as we've always known. Those of us who understand Iran a bit, we knew this was a myth. But now it's been proven. They took out the leadership of the guards and nothing happened. In fact, the opposite happened. People rallied behind the guards, the armed forces, the government, the state, in a way in which I don't think would probably happen in any other country that I can think of, to be very blunt. I don't think any other country could have withstood it like the Iranians. And this is not the first time that this has happened, by the way. During the war with Saddam Hussein, we had the same things happen. And nothing, you know, there was no, the state never weakened. Today, Iran is stronger than it was before the Israeli regime attack. There's no doubt about that. Yes, there's been damage, people have been killed, but the unity in the country, ordinary people, the way in which they rallied, the mood has changed in Iran. And so Iran is significantly stronger than it was a few weeks ago. Anyone who lives in Iran, understands Iran, would recognize. But we have to keep this in mind, that this was a regime change operation. And this shows how rogue the United States and the Israelis are, that they're willing to just attack countries unprovoked and take out the leadership. This is something unprecedented. But it is happening, and no one in Europe or in Australia or New Zealand or Japan or Korea or these other regimes that are agents of the West or in our region, none of them are going to do anything about it. And that's why, and that goes back to what I was saying earlier on, that the Islamic Republic of Iran's focus is on its internal capabilities and internal strength. But in any case, if there is another attack, they're not going to have the same results, even though it's difficult to protect people because the Israelis bomb their families, they bomb their homes, they bomb their parents, their children, their wives. They kill everyone. They're just monsters. The West has no red lines because the West supports all this. I mean, it's not just Israelis, it's the entire West. They have no red lines. They have no moral boundaries for themselves. Remember what was once said, that Europe is the garden, and the outside of the garden have a jungle. Well, it turns out that the jungle is Europe. The previous foreign policy chief of the EU said that now that he's retired, you see him taking a somewhat different tone than before, which is, I don't know how to interpret that. But in any case, it's not going to happen again. They've lost that opportunity. And Iran is going to be more careful about the future, and it's probably going to hit much harder next time around. But we'll have to see what happens. Again, I'm sure that something is brewing. The very fact that Tucker Carlson was so keen on having this interview broadcast as Netanyahu was flying into New York, I think shows that there is the high probability of more conflict. Otherwise, I don't think the timing was good.
When we look at the situation in what has happened to Libya, and they bombed, they killed Gaddafi, and they wanted to do the same in Iran, Professor Morandi. They wanted to do the same. What they've done to Syria, look at what has happened. In my opinion, if they could do something with Iran, they wanted to separate, they wanted to divide Iran as they wanted to do it to Russia before the war. You remember when the war with Ukraine started, they were talking about it's about Putin's war. It's not Russian war. Russia doesn't want this war in Ukraine. Then they went after, maybe Russia should be divided in federations. I think the same sort of plan they have in their mind about Iran. And that's why the people in Iran are totally unified against whatever comes against, because they see a threat to the country, to the core principles of the country. Your take on that, and how is that going to play in the mind of Iranians?
I also think that the West doesn't understand the sheer popularity of Ayatollah Khamenei and how much respect he commands. Yeah. And since I know you're fluent in Persian and you saw what happened on the night before Ashura when he came, when he entered that ceremony that was being held, and how across the country when the news came out, because ceremonies were being held across the country because it's a key event, Ashura, across the land, and how you had people cheering throughout the country on the night before Ashura. They don't understand that. They cannot comprehend how strong the Islamic Republic of Iran is, because they believe their own propaganda, and they cannot be this can't be changed. The only thing that can be done is for the country to be strong and for the axis of resistance to remain strong. And that's why, again, that you know, whenever I speak to Western intellectuals, they simply, or I mean, mainstream intellectuals or elites, they simply cannot comprehend this. It's no matter what, how much you explain, no matter how much you try to point out this out to them, it's just, it's useless. So the only way forward is for Iran to prepare itself for the next round. And I have no doubt that the next round will end worse for the Americans and the Israeli regime than this round. And it's only making Iran stronger. It's making Iran much more popular. People across the region are seeing through the sectarianism that's been promoted by Qatar and Saudi Arabia and Turkey and other regimes for decades. People across the world are seeing through the propaganda and the narratives that have been spread by Western media and Western think tanks and Western institutions against Iran for decades. People now see Iran as the hope for the Palestinian people. They see Iran as the and the axis of resistance and the broader resistance as the moral, as the side which has morality and the other side being immoral. So the longer this lasts, the more the Israelis and their allies are going to be despised. Every day, you know, we discussed this early on in the genocide. Every day that this genocide goes on, and we were saying this a year ago, more than a year, every day that this continues, it only weakens the Israeli regime. It weakens the entire West because the entire world becomes increasingly hostile. So every time the Israelis attack Iran, and Iran, every single missile of Iran that hits Tel Aviv raises Iran's stature. And it diminishes the stature of those countries that pretend to care for the Palestinian people, but do trade and business with the Israeli regime. So every missile that's fired, even though war is a terrible thing, but any act by the Israeli regime further weakens itself, strengthens Iran, and weakens all of those countries that are complicit or that are assisting the Israeli regime or who are looking or which are looking away and trying to ignore what's going on. This is a lose-lose situation for Netanyahu and the regime. Of course, Netanyahu needs this escalate, these wars in order to remain in power. But he still loses. The regime is losing. It's like those old movies when I was young, where people, you know, apparently that's not how quicksand works, but you would see like people fall into quicksand, and the more they move, the further they would sink in quicksand. Apparently, quicksand doesn't really work that way, but that's, you know, that's beyond the point. The point is, the more the regime struggles, the more it goes down. The more the West supports it, the further it diminishes, and the further it is despised.
I know you fought during the war with Iraq, and during those days, the people who were fighting, they were so young and in their, I don't know, 18, 20 years old, going to war and fighting for Iran. And Iran has learned a lot during those days. General Soleimani was the production of the war in Iraq. He learned a lot, and his experience came from the war between Iran and Iraq. That's why he became his personality was somehow different, special. But when the experience came to his personality, it was something different from others. How do you find the experience of these 12 days of war on Iran? And we know that the situation is not even comparable to what it was before, during the initial days of the Iranian revolution, in the aftermath of the Shah of Iran. The situation somehow today is different, but what are the lessons from the 12 days war in terms of intelligence, in terms of military, and in terms of the capabilities of Iranian being used effectively?
Well, you know, all of these commanders who were murdered by the Israeli regime and Americans, they were veterans of that war, and they were volunteers, like myself. We have a conscript army, and then you have the volunteers. And they were all volunteers. And so a lot of young people in Iran who didn't even know any much about the war and who didn't really care, many young people, especially the post-corona generation, many of them have been living in a somewhat different universe. Their worldview was shattered, and they learned about reality, maybe I can't say the hard way, but they suddenly were confronted with reality, and they came to appreciate these people. So the guards today and the armed forces in general are much more popular than they were a month ago. But I think that aside, and public opinion, which I think is very important and key, that aside, I think the armed forces will be using these 12 days as an important learning experience, both how with regards to protecting your assets, the fight against foreign intelligence agencies. I think we've been very lax. You've lived in Iran. Iran is far more open than people in the West think. I would argue that Iran is much more open in general than in Europe. And you know how people can move around, how people can, people who are not registered in the country, illegal or unregistered immigrants, how they, you know, they live in how they live in Iran without much difficulty. A balance has to be struck where people's rights and privacy are preserved, but where Western intelligence agencies cannot use the freedoms that exist in Iran against national security. And I also think that one of the advantages of this war was that the Israeli regime put everything on the table. They used everything that they had. And what Israel has is far more advanced than what Ukraine has. So Iran now knows what the capabilities of the regime are. And Iran preserved most of its capabilities. It did not show its hand, as they say, because they want to leave that for a better time. But Iran, now that it knows what the capabilities of the regime is, they will start reorganizing and preparing themselves for the regime, which has these capabilities. I think that that the advantage lies with Iran. The Israeli regime was a strategic success the first day of the war, but it was a tactical success the first day of the war, but it was a strategic catastrophe for the Americans and the Israeli regime. And I think that the second round will probably not have that tactical success, at least to that degree. I find it highly unlikely, but I think the strategic defeat will be greater.
Before wrapping up, Professor Mehdi, I think one of the great achievements of what has happened between Iran and Israel is the disconnection between generations, the generations that who experienced the war in Iraq and those generation, younger generations that didn't know anything about it. And they thought that it's all about democracy. It's all about talks. It's all about being open and free society. And they see that that's somehow they're using these sort of arguments to attack. It's a soft attack, but do you feel that that's happening in the younger generation, that they perceive that they're getting closer to the older generations who have experienced it before?
No doubt. There's been a sea change. And I think actually Trump's meeting with Netanyahu, all of these contribute further to cementing that relationship that has been strengthened. The United States has lost its soft power capability. It's been losing it for the last 21 months. But I think inside Iran, that segment of society that has been taught by the Persian language media to hate the state, and you know, who in general, because of the problems that exist in the country, they became disinterested. I think you see that it's become clear that they, for the most part, I can't say everyone, obviously not everyone, but for the most part, they have become much more politically aware. And as I, you know, may have said before, I'm on a previous occasion, that I think the most important change inside Iran was the fact that society has been brought together in a way which I have not seen since the 1980s when Saddam invaded the country.
Thank you so much, Professor Marahni, for being with us today. Great pleasure, as always.
Thank you for having me, Nima.